This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebacher at the Zen Center of New York City. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order, coordinator for the National Buddhist Prison Sangha, and the head of operations at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. I wanted to talk this morning about the five hindrances. The five hindrances are desire, anger or ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And so this is one of the lists in Buddhism that point to different states of mind in this case. The Buddha said, these five hindrances are makers of blindness, causing lack of vision, causing lack of knowledge, detrimental to wisdom, tending to vexation, leading away from nirvana. They are hindrances. Joseph Goldstein, in commenting on the hindrances, says that when we're not mindful of them, the hindrances envelop the mind and obstruct it from developing wise discernment regarding skillful and unskillful actions. They hinder our development of concentration and other factors of awakening. So there are hindrances in our mind to our own concentration, and thus are hindrances to seeing what is skillful, doing what is skillful. And the Buddha used a couple of similes to kind of pull out the importance and explain the hindrances. So this is one of them. He said, practitioners of the way, suppose a person were to take a loan and undertake business, and their business were to succeed so that they could repay all the money of the old loan, and there would remain enough extra to support their family. Then in considering this, they would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a person were afflicted, suffering, and gravely ill, and their food would not agree with them, and their body had not strength. But later they would recover from the affliction, and their food would agree with them, and their body would regain strength. Then, on considering this, they would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a person were imprisoned in a prison house, and later they were released from prison, safe and secure, with no loss to their property. Then, on considering this, they would be glad and full of joy. And he goes on, there's some others. He says, just in this same way, when we are hindered, when we are caught by the hindrances, it is like we are imprisoned. It is like we are ill. And being released, freed from the hindrances, liberating ourselves from the hindrances, there is great relief. The hindrances arise through unwise attention, from not guarding our attention, from giving our attention and our energy to the hindrance, fueling this state of mind that's not helpful, that's not skillful. So in pointing out the hindrances, we're being pointed to how do we use our mind? How do we want to use our mind? And the Buddha calls our attention to these hindrances because they have such an impact, such an effect. They condition our mind and affect our actions. And they can become so familiar, so kind of part of our understand our experience of our mind, that we don't see them as hindrances. Or we just see them as our mind, as the way things are, as we are. And I think this is the importance of this simile that the Buddha offers, which seems in some ways dramatic. He's trying to point to the great difference between being caught in the hindrances, being hindered, and being free, freeing ourselves, releasing ourselves from these hindrances in the mind. I was thinking how this points to the importance of seeing for ourselves, of experiencing what it is to let go of something. When we drop a desire, when we let go of anger or some drama that we're kind of creating and in the midst of. When we discern something clearly and doubt drops away. When we settle our mind, having been agitated, having been disturbed, to learn to know that feeling in our body mind, to learn to trust that it is there, it is in that space where that we let go into, that is our true life, that we're returning to our true life. We have to learn this, know this from our own experience so that we know that that is our true life, that the hindrance, the being caught in the hindrance is not our true life. It can feel like it. It can feel like it's just our life. I was thinking one of the hindrances where I get caught, and hopefully get caught less these days, is in kind of judgment and anger. I think there were years when I spent a lot of time just being irritated with other people, with the way things were kind of going on around me, the way people were doing things. Right? Part of the hindrance is that it was out there. It was hard to see that this was my anger and my judgment, because it seemed so clear from inside my experience that I was right. And so I sort of had, it was kind of right to be irritated, right? That people were continuing to do these things the wrong way. It was justified. And there's a power in that, conviction in that. And this was familiar to me. So it was kind of comfortable and affirming in a way, enlivening. It felt alive and kind of engaged, like I cared. I did care. So how do we see what we're creating? How do we see where we're caught when we're caught? And for me, with this anger and irritation that I wasn't really seeing that I was in, it was suffering that started to sort of crack through, push through. I started to realize that I was not happy being irritated all the time. And I also started to see the effect that that energy was having on the people that I was irritated with, right? Often through no fault of their own. I was remembering there was many years ago, the monastery, Daido Roshi, our founder, bought a piece of property up in the Adirondacks. It was a place that he loved and he had gone to all his life. And he was really excited late in life to finally be able to sort of have this little piece of property up there. And there was nothing on it. And so we built a small cabin on it. And he found a local carpenter to do most of the work. But then some of us who were in residence at the monastery were sent up to help with that. And particularly some of us who had some carpentry skills. And so I was sent up there 1 week to do some work. And I went up with Yukon, and he had been up there before and worked with this guy who's named Garby. And when we got there, the first few days, Garby wasn't around. And so Yukon and I were working, and there were all these cans of beer around in the cabin. And it turned out that Garby drank a fair amount and drank while he was working. And later in the week, Garby came, and he was working. He and his son were working with us for a while. And Yukon noticed that Garby wasn't drinking. And he mentioned that to me. And I said, yeah, it's because he can feel my judgment. Right? I was aware enough to know that. And Yukon was like, wow, that's a heavy burden, right? That I was carrying. That was very helpful for me, actually, to hear that. I was able to hear that. I didn't realize, I don't think I really saw that was the weight of what I was carrying around and the weight of what I was doing. And letting go of that, right, is a relief. Letting go of our hindrances, freeing ourselves of our hindrance, is a relief. So with each of these hindrances, again, desire, anger, sloth, restlessness, doubt, How do we see how we're caught up? How do we see when we're so convinced, so inside of them? How do we see through? How do we see that there's another way? How do we see that these hindrances are not actually what we want? Right? That being caught in desire, perpetuating desire, is not actually what we want. It's not actually going to bring us satisfaction. How do we see that release from the hindrances is actually what's going to be skillful? And in working with hindrances, how do we find the middle way so that we're not just indulging and so that we're not suppressing? What is this middle way? Because with a little bit of study, we see that indulgence, just going along with these hindrances, doesn't work, isn't healthy for anyone. But we also can't just tell ourselves that we're going to stop being angry. We're not going to have any desires anymore. Right? That's not how we work. That's not how the mind works. And if it feels like you're able to do that, I talked to someone who was wanting to come into residency a little while back, and I asked him how he worked with difficulty. He said he never got angry. He didn't really have any conflict with anyone. And I was like, you're doing something. You're blind. You're suppressing something. You're repressing. And I tried to sort of offer that to him. And so we can kind of know if there's something that we're not feeling, you know, that's sort of the helpfulness of the Buddhist teachings around some particular aspects of mind. If we can't find, it's like he's pointing us to look for these things in our own experience, because they're human experience. So if you feel like you can stop yourself from being angry or just turn off desires, you're suppressing something, right? And so that can be an invitation to look more closely at what's actually happening. I also think it's important to not see the hindrances as faults, right? They're hindrances. They are challenges. But it's not that there's something wrong with us, right? Because that's the motivation. Well, if you think it's wrong to be angry, a Buddhist person shouldn't get angry, right? Then that's where we're going to, may lead to suppression, trying to fix it that way. It also is kind of, I think when we, you know, see something as a fault, as something wrong, we kind of solidify it in a way, make it harder for us to work with it, make it harder. The barriers that we encounter in our life are actually places of entry. It's where, this is where practice happens, is where we struggle, is where there is conflict, there is suffering, there is disappointment, there's dis-ease. Those are all pointing us to, this is where we enter, this is where we practice, this is where we transform our mind, transform our habits, transform our life. Why is it a barrier? Why do I struggle here, have difficulty? I was remembering one of my, the first sesshins that I did. Sesshin is a silent meditation intensive that we do every month up at the monastery for a week. And at the end of the week, and so we're truly in silence, and so really not communicating with each other, and we're together, but everyone is very much having their own kind of private experience in their own little mind, their own world, which is kind of amazing. And at the end of the week, we have a part of coming out of the silence together, lifting the silence. We do something called open sozan, where people have a chance, still in the zendo, so sort of just coming out of the silence, to speak, and to speak in the zendo and to share something of their experience from the week. And I remember this guy who had apparently been practicing for some time with a different sangha, talking about how during the week he had this amazing, incredible pain in his shoulder, and he'd never experienced pain like this before. And he went to one of the monitors and said, you know, and told her, you know, about this pain. And I guess he wasn't sure that he would be able to continue sitting. And he recounted, he was speaking, he said, you know, the monitor said to him, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky to have this pain, right? To be encountering this barrier. And, you know, she was hearing this and like laughing and it wasn't, you know, but her point was that it's really hard to understand that, right? That's not our way of encountering a difficulty. But there was an opportunity in encountering this difficulty for him, right? And this, you know, this very, it's always very particular, right? What is the difficulty that we're facing? And so when we look, when we encounter a difficulty, we should study it. Look closely. And so a desire, for instance, what's there when we are experiencing a desire? What is it? Right? Can you touch desire itself, that feeling in your body, mind? Can you find it? How does desire have such power? Right? We can be completely, can feel like we're controlled by desire. Consume, we talk about being consumed, right? Our language is apt. Where does that come from, that power? And how is it that we can be so completely consumed at one time, in one moment, and at another moment, it's gone? It's not there at all. What happened? Where did it go? And so when we become aware of a hindrance, of a barrier, something that we're coming up against, we should look closely, right? This is the place to study. This is where we get to know our mind. We have a chance to see how we create and how we can let go, to learn, well, what is it to pass through a barrier? What happens? It's important to experience that, to learn that for ourselves. We talk in Zen about barrier gates. They're not just barriers. They're gates, right? They're places of entry. They're gate barriers. They're entry barriers. And so again, to try not to see them as good or bad, to try not to see our mental states as good or bad, right? This is part of the hindrance, this is where we get stuck, is this duality, this judgment. Part of releasing the hindrance can be just seeing it for what it is, without judgment, without making more of it. It's the judgment that is binding us. In some senses, blinding us. And encountering these aspects of our own mind, these very human states of mind, we're simply getting to know our mind, getting to know how to work with ourselves. This is true, and I think maybe this is helpful to sort of make it more simple. This is what we're learning in working with thoughts in Zazen. The thought is not the problem. Thoughts are not a problem. In Zazen, we're not trying to get rid of our thoughts or escape them or stop them. Thoughts are not a problem. But they seem to be a problem. They seem to cause us problems, to be the root of these hindrances, be sort of part and parcel of some of these hindrances. And so we study thoughts. That's what we're doing in Zazen. One of the important things that we're doing in Zazen is studying thought, studying the nature of thought. That's the really important part of the Zazen instruction, to see the thought. It's your thought. See that it's distracting you. That it seems that you're distracted by the thought. That it seems to take you away from your breath, from the object of your concentration. How does that happen? What's happening? When we talk about taking responsibility for a thought, for your thought, which just means seeing that it's your thought. No judgment, not good or bad, just seeing that it's your thought, acknowledging that. Right? Nobody did that thought to you. Right? It's just your thought. It arose in your mind. And let it go. What is it to let go? Where do you let a thought go to? Where does it go? When you let go of a thought, do you do anything? Did I do anything? But the thought is gone. It went. What is a thought? What is a thought? What is its nature? It feels like we get caught up in thought, that we are kind of controlled by our thoughts sometimes. Who's controlling who? What is it to liberate a thought? To be liberated from thought. Again, we need to see this for ourselves. That's what's transformative. Right? We can talk about it. I can ask these questions. But they're just talking about it. And with all of this to know, to trust, to see, to know for ourselves that everything is workable. Everything is workable. And so this is why the Buddha calls our attention to the hindrances, points out from his own experience of working with his mind, these places where we humans get caught, are blinded, these ways that we struggle and create struggle. He's pointing to them because this is where we find liberation. This is where we liberate ourselves. And so encountering the hindrances in ourselves, our own particular versions, encountering them over and over again, we can become familiar with them, know them closely, and just recognize, yes, this is what my mind does. I'm lazy sometimes. I get angry. I have strong desires. I'm restless, agitated, distracted. These are all things that that my mind does. I doubt myself and others. This is another thing that my mind does. Getting closer like this, this recognition lightens, loosens the hindrance. Thich Nhat Hanh says that this path, this Buddhist path, is a path of contentment and fearlessness. When we become familiar with the difficult, sometimes scary aspects of our mind, of our experience, they're not scary anymore. When we learn to struggle less with these aspects of our mind, we find contentment, peace, that's not dependent on circumstance. The other simile that the Buddha uses to talk about the hindrances is of a pool of clear water that I understand to be our mind. And so when sense desire is present in the mind, it's as if the pool were suffused with a colored dye, because desires color our perception. When aversion and anger is present, it's like boiling water. We can't see clearly. When we're heated up by anger, we're in a state of turbulence. Our mind is in a state of turbulence. Sloth and torpor are like the pool of waters overgrown by algae. It's stagnant. Our mind is stagnant, and we can't see clearly. Restlessness and worry are like water that is stirred up by the wind. The mind is tossed by that agitation. And doubt is like muddy water. We can't see to the bottom. When we're doubting, everything is obscured. So the importance here in talking about the hindrances that he's pointing to is the importance of settling the mind, the importance of concentration, developing concentration, allowing the mind to settle into its natural state of clarity and awareness. The Buddha gives some guidance in working with the hindrances. He says that first, we should know when a hindrance is present and when a hindrance is absent. The second, we should know the conditions leading to the arising of a hindrance and the conditions leading to the removal of a hindrance. And he said we should know the conditions that prevent the future arriving. And so I wanted to look a little bit at restlessness, at the fourth hindrance, and use this guidance of the Buddha. And so restlessness is agitation, excitement, right? The word says without rest, right? The mind is not at rest. It is not concentrated. It's distraction. It's jumping from one thing to another. And it's also worry, or can be worry, regret, anxiety. Often these go together, are connected. And I was thinking about restlessness. I was sort of interested in looking at this one of the hindrances, because it feels like there's so much of it in us these days. And you know, all of these have been human tendencies for millennia, right? The Buddha taught about these hindrances 2,500 years ago, because they were what he saw in the human mind 2,500 years ago, right? That's a long time ago. And so this is what humans have been experiencing for millennia. And I wonder if there are times like ours where some of them are more prevalent, whether we are more restless and distracted and agitated, more preoccupied with worry because of the state of our world, because of the news that we hear, the predictions about our future, because of the technology and our relationship with technology and the constant flow of information, of that news, of particular people's news, maybe of our own news being putting our own news out there, constant communication. So the Buddha's guidance is first to recognize the hindrance, to know when your mind is agitated, to know when you're worried. Again, because we're so adaptable, it's possible to not know, to just see that as our state of mind. It is a state of mind. But how do we recognize it as a particular state of mind? And a hindrance, in a sense, not a true state of mind, not a skillful state of mind, not a wholesome state. And so first, just to notice, to know, there is power in simply bringing awareness to an object of mind, to a state of mind. Thich Nhat Hanh says, we should remember that when the lamp of mindfulness is lit up, the mental formation under observation will naturally transform in a wholesome direction. Naturally. Just from bringing our awareness to it. And the Buddha said to know when a hindrance is absent. What if it's never absent? And so this is the importance, points to the importance of finding stillness, finding quiet, of sitting, of zazen, of seeing our mind, of being able to see what's happening in our mind. I was just talking to a student recently who had come for Sesshin and hadn't been to Sesshin, hadn't been to the monastery for quite a while. And he was just appreciating how he was like, I haven't been able to see, right? I haven't been able to see what's been happening. And now I see, now I've been able to settle again. And he was just recognizing that that felt good. Right? That's a good, when we can, and so we need to know the settled state in order to know the agitated state, in order to recognize when we're agitated. And to know that it's possible to settle our mind. It's possible for your mind to be still. That is the natural state of your mind. And I would respectfully add a step to the Buddha's instruction in working with a hindrance. And maybe he's implying this. But to see the effect of a hindrance on our mind. How does it affect us? So not just the sort of experience of being agitated, but then what does that do? Right? So it was Goldstein who was talking about it makes it difficult for us to see what is skillful and not skillful. Right? But so to see the effect that a hindrance has on us. A few weeks ago, I was at a sort of family event and saw a young cousin of mine who I hadn't seen in a number of years. He's in his late 20s, and he's beautiful and very sharp and intelligent and articulate, and works for some tech firm. And he was asking me about the monastery, and he was particularly interested. And he was like, you know, when people come to the monastery, do you take their phones away? And I said, no, why? And he said, because he felt like he needed someone to take his phone away. And I was sort of, I could sort of feel myself, I was like, oh, this is my opportunity to like learn something about young people who don't live at the monastery. And so I asked him, you know, why? Like, what is the effect? You know, do you see the effect? And he said, yeah. He said, I can see, I can't have a long, like, I can't have a thought for more than like a couple of minutes. Then I'm on to the next thought. And I was like, I didn't quite understand how that worked. Like, he has a like sophisticated, you know, does sort of sophisticated work, I think. And he said, no, that's how we work. Right? It's one thing and you get it done, you make a decision, go on to the next thing. And so it was interesting that that's seeing the effect, right? He could see that effect, that he can't have a sustained thought. So recognizing the hindrance can be simply, how does it feel to know, how is it when I'm agitated? What does it do to my experience of the world? And to really attend carefully, because all of our habits come from seeking pleasure and avoiding discomfort. And so the habits, even our hindrances, they come from seeking pleasure of some sort. So when I was angry and irritated, there was a certain pleasure that came from that. That's why I kept doing it. That's why I perpetuated that, found it in all these different situations that I encountered. And so when my cousin is looking at his phone again and again, it's because he finds some pleasure there. When I check my email again and again and again, it's because there is the possibility of some little burst of pleasure that I'm going to hear from someone, or I'm important, or, and there's a kind of truth to that, right? There is pleasure there. You can't deny that. That's why we do it. That's why it's addictive. But to look closely, how do I feel after an hour of that, after a whole day of that at my desk, where I'm a little bit agitated, a little bit distracted? How do I feel? What does that do? And one way to work with this is simply to experiment. And I'm not always disciplined enough to do this, but what if I only check my email at the beginning of the day? And when I come back from lunch, do I feel differently? Does that affect the course of my day? So the Buddha says, to know the conditions leading to the arising of a hindrance. What causes restlessness in this, with this hindrance, and worry and agitation? How many people have you talked to, or have you yourself yelled at the TV in the last couple of years? Yelled at the TV news. St. John of the Cross, again, many centuries ago, said, disquietude is always vanity because it serves no good. Yes, even if the whole world were thrown into confusion and all things in it, disquietude on that account will still be vanity. So what is skillful? What is helpful? What is wholesome? When is something just indulging ourself? Perpetuating ourself, our sense of self, just having an opinion, just being upset, doesn't help anyone. And the Buddha said, know the conditions leading to the removal of a hindrance. How do you work with restlessness and worry? How do you settle your mind when it's unsettled? So again, we have to know that it's unsettled, and we have to know that it can be settled. You know, there's a way in which we practice on the cushion in the zendo with sangha, because it's easier, right? It's much easier to settle your mind in this room with these people than it is when you're somewhere else, right? At work, walking down the street. And the teaching here, I think, is pointing both to removing the source of distraction or removing ourselves from the source of distraction, but more importantly, to working with our mind, to know how to work with our mind, to our concentration, our awareness. Know that that is always, awareness is always there. It's always accessible. And in a sense, this is always the place to turn, right? Is to return to your awareness, return to something, you know, to use things to return. So to use your body, to know how to return to your body and just feel your body, right? So we do Kinhin. We learn how to feel your feet on the floor, to be in your body. You can always feel your feet on the floor. We work with our breath because our breath is always with us. Wherever you are, you can always return to your breath. And awareness, just awareness itself, it's always available. It is always, the mind is always aware. To learn to trust that. And how do we prevent the hindrance from arising? Essentially, I think this is the whole path. This is the whole endeavor. Because all of our hindrances come from our misapprehension, our misunderstanding of our sense of self, come from our sense of self, our ways of perpetuating this, right? So think of the self-centeredness of anger, self-centeredness of desire. And again, not with judgment, not as good, bad, but just to see that's where it comes from. That's what it's creating. That's what it's tied to. You know, and I was thinking how these hindrances, you know, they overlap and intertwine, right? The point isn't to like, okay, I'm going to work on anger now, and then I'm going to work on sloth, right? I mean, we work with them as they arise, as we encounter them in our life. But in looking at them, we see that they overlap, right? Anger and desire often go together or connected, for instance. And in working with them, we're also in working with any barrier. We're working with ourself. We're working with attachment itself. We're learning to let go and to loosen. And so whenever we're practicing well, it's like we're practicing our life, our self. And I think it's helpful. This is something that Shugen Roshi said to me, and I think I've talked about this here, but the importance, the helpfulness, the skillfulness of respecting our karma, respecting our own particular places of difficult karma, strong habits. So in looking at the hindrances that are particularly strong in us, some of us work with anger more than others. Some of us work with doubt and self-doubt more than others. Some of us work with energy, right? Which is the sloth, the laziness. And again, to try and hear that without judgment, but just so that's our hindrance, is finding energy, finding our key, our life energy, and like bringing that to life. Some of us work with that more than others. And we work with different hindrances at different times. But to have respect for that, that this, again, this is, okay, this is what my mind does. This is what my body, mind, this conglomeration does. So that's why I encounter it in my experience. And in a way, that's okay. That just means this is where my work is. It's just being familiar, not scared. It's okay to have these things that we struggle with. That's just how it is. How it is being human. And to trust and learn from our own experience that things change. There is transformation. So even with our places of deep karma, transformation is possible. Transformation happens. There may be things that never go away completely, but great change can happen. Great transformation. And even when that happens, we're still our old self with our own particular habits and quirks, our particular places that we still get stuck. Our mind still does those particular things, but in a different way, with less power. Thinking we, you know, even with years of practice and good practice and transformation, we're still our motley, we're still this motley crew, right? This beautiful, wonderful motley crew. And things still need taken care of, always.
Thanks for listening. Do you have physical challenges to visiting Zen Mountain Monastery or Fire Lotus Temple? The Diamond Net is a group of Mountains and Rivers Order students who are available to support your practice. We provide Dharma and other support to Sangha members facing life challenges such as illness or mobility issues. If you would like to visit the monastery or the Zen Center but need some physical help, someone from the Diamond Net can assist you. For information, email diamondnet@mro.org or visit our webpage at zmm.org and look under the programs menu.